Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Josh, if you were to describe U.S. banking throughout 2023 in one word, what would it be?
I would say panic.
Panic. Let's think back to then, right around this time last March. Silicon Valley Bank is on the verge of collapse. And when it does, that sparks a crisis among regional banks, and others fall too. It shakes America's banking sector to its core. And the FT's U.S. banking editor, Josh Franklin, says that since then, many small and medium-sized banks have struggled.
It's really been a case of the haves and the have-nots in U.S. banks over the last 12 months or so. The haves have been a pretty small number. You've got the very, very biggest banks, JP Morgan's, Bank of America's, Wells Fargo, that have actually been making a lot of money. And then you've got the have-nots, the kind of mid-sized regional banks on down that have really seen their profit margins struggle in a period of high interest rates.
Within that group of haves performing well, there's one bank that's truly risen to the top.
And that was JP Morgan Chase. JP Morgan was already the biggest bank in the U.S. by assets, by deposits, by headcount. But they really managed to open up a sizable lead over peers like Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and Citi.
That sizable lead is pretty much undeniable.
They made almost $50 billion in profits in 2023, which is more than they've ever made in their history. Across the entire banking industry, just under $1 out of every $5 in profits was earned by JP Morgan. JP Morgan themselves even admitted that they were over-earning in 2023.
That's right. Over-earning. JP Morgan's record $50 billion in profits were more than the rest of the largest American banks combined. But in a year that was overall pretty rough for the industry, how did JP Morgan do it? Michaela Tendera from the Financial Times. Banking in America hasn't been easy since Silicon Valley Bank collapsed a year ago, but JP Morgan is defying that trend. Today on Behind the Money, we're diving into the three reasons why JP Morgan is doing so well, and what, if anything, could threaten that in the future. The first of the three reasons why JP Morgan's been doing so well begins with a decision they made last year, after the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and after the collapse of Signature Bank. So let's head back to that time. It's April, and another regional bank, First Republic, is in some hot water.
The end appears nigh for First Republic Bank.
First Republic's problems are causing anxiety for everyone from customers to the feds.
We are awaiting the fate of First Republic Bank.
By the end of the month, there's a run on the bank. The government organizes an emergency auction of First Republic. Four different banks bid and rebid to take it over. And in the end, the winner is JP Morgan.
First Republic was the second largest bank failure in U.S. history and the biggest that we'd seen in the U.S. since the 2008 financial crisis. When the bank ultimately did fail at the end of April, beginning of May, JP Morgan was pretty well placed to scoop up the remains of the bank.
Under normal conditions, Josh says that regulators wouldn't have let JP Morgan buy a bank like First Republic. But these circumstances made it different.
It was a unique opportunity for JP Morgan because U.S. regulators don't like big banks getting bigger, especially through acquisitions. And JP Morgan actually isn't able to buy another bank because it has more than 10% of the industry's deposits. But because it was special circumstances in a government-managed process of a failed bank, JP Morgan was allowed to participate in this auction and in the end blew out of the water these other smaller banks that were competing to buy First Republic.
Now, here's the thing. This rescue wasn't a new strategy. It's actually a page out of a playbook that JP Morgan and its CEO Jamie Dimon have used before. So let's rewind even further in time. To 2008.
People might remember way back in 2008, they won an auction in another deal orchestrated by the government to buy Bear Stearns, the investment bank, when it was on the brink of collapse.
It's JP Morgan Chase to the rescue.
JP Morgan Chase has a deal to buy Bear Stearns for $2 a share. Less than a year.
And then flash forward to Washington Mutual, which is still the biggest bank failure in U.S. history.
Washington Mutual has gone under.
The FDIC took over Washington Mutual yesterday, then sold its assets to JP Morgan Chase for nearly $2 billion.
JP Morgan also was able to scoop up that business. And these kind of string of acquisitions have really helped to build the modern day JP Morgan into what it is.
Deja vu, anyone? JP Morgan swoops in to buy two separate failing banks in 2008 and then does the same thing in 2023. It looks like JP Morgan has a reputation for being the bank that never lets a crisis go to waste. So, Josh, what would you say really positioned JP Morgan to be able to make these acquisitions, both in 2008 and again in 2023? How were they able to pull this off each time?
So one thing Jamie Dimon is very, very proud of and talks about constantly is the bank's fortress balance sheet. And this is basically making sure that JP Morgan is in a financial position so that it can weather any financial crises, prepare for any kind of worst case scenario. Now, and not all rivals can say that they are in a similarly strong position.
And that fortress balance sheet, as Jamie Dimon puts it, leads to reason number two of why JP Morgan brought home a record amount of profits last year.
JP Morgan has this perception of safety in part because of the way it's run and because of their fortress balance sheet. But I think probably what is even more important if you're an average person in the street and wondering where to keep your money, you think the government would never let JP Morgan go bust.
In other words, what bank could seem safer than the biggest one in America?
With everything that happened with Silicon Valley Bank, it made a lot of people question, well, these small regional banks in my community, how safe are they relative to the bigger banks that I feel like, you know, they're so heavily regulated, the government would never let them fail, I should maybe keep my money with them.
So what does that mean for small and mid-sized banks?
This is the challenging thing. These other banks that aren't classified as systemically relevant to the U.S. economy, they don't benefit from this same sense from customers that, you know, they are unfailable. And so that means that they have to work harder in some cases to convince customers to keep their money with them. The whole vision of the U.S. regional banking model is that these local banks serve a purpose because they're in their communities in a way that just a kind of large scale bank just couldn't possibly replicate. But the challenge is, at the end of the day, people want their money to be safe. And these smaller banks just don't have that.
So to recap, we have two key ingredients to JP Morgan's recent success. Number one, they pulled out a page from their 2008 playbook and bought a failing bank. Doing that allowed JP Morgan to earn a lot of new business by taking on First Republic's former customers. And number two, they maintained their position as a safe haven. Their massive size retained and attracted customers who were scared other banks could go under in last year's chaos. Now, the final thing that's really boosted JP Morgan is actually how other big banks have performed.
All of their other big rivals, which benefited from higher interest rates to varying degrees, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and Citi, they all had their own stumbles and struggles over the course of the year. You've got Bank of America that made certain bets about interest rates in the market that haven't panned out. You've got Wells Fargo and Citigroup, which are both under consent orders and restrictions by the U.S. government because of previous missteps in their businesses. So it kind of leaves JP Morgan as the one unblemished mega bank in the US that's really been able to capitalize.
While each of its rivals have hit different roadblocks, Josh says the Bank of America is the really interesting one to focus on.
Bank of America had invested a lot of their excess deposits that they had amassed back when interest rates were low, and they decided to reinvest some of those deposits by buying treasuries and other quote-unquote safe assets. But then the issue for Bank of America when rates started to rise was that the value of these securities fell and they couldn't really sell them because if they sold them, they'd have to recognize a loss. So it just meant that instead of being able to reinvest these deposits, they had to just leave these securities on their portfolio, on their balance sheet. And that means that Bank of America was sitting on a paper loss of about $100 billion.
And so this was the kind of investment that Jamie Dimon at JP Morgan avoided?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, JP Morgan didn't have that problem. About 2 years ago, Jamie Dimon said he wouldn't go anywhere near long-dated treasuries because he knew what would happen when interest rates eventually went up. And Bank of America made a different calculation and thought, this is something that's worth us doing right now and investing in treasuries. But fast forward to 2.5 years later, and JP Morgan seems to have made the right call.
So a choice JP Morgan made a couple years ago panned out. But now the question is, are they going to be able to keep up this stellar performance? After the break, we'll look at the challenges ahead for the biggest bank in America.
Do you ever wonder what exactly was off about Ridley Scott's Napoleon? Or why Dolly Parton's new rock album is impossible to dislike? I want to tell you about a new culture podcast from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. On Monday, I interview a guest about life and how to live a good one, from winter travel to living more creatively. And Friday is a chat show about art. Two FT journalists and I dig into a new release. Join us by searching for Life and Art wherever you listen.
JP Morgan wants to hold on to this title of being the biggest bank in the US, even as many other smaller banks are closing branches and downsizing. It's making its intentions known by doing things like opening new locations around the country, investing more than its competitors in technology, and, well, by doing this. I'm standing here on the sidewalk near the corner of 48th and Park in Midtown Manhattan. And I'm craning my neck up to look at the top of this massive tower that's under construction right now. And you can just see construction workers with their highlighter yellow vests on and trucks bringing different sorts of materials, wood, and I saw a cement mixing truck and different cranes. The other day, I went to get a look at the site where JP Morgan's building a brand new headquarters in New York.
What it's really emblematic of is the success and the strength of JP Morgan, the fact that they are spending all this money on this new headquarters that they're talking about being, you know, a new symbol in New York City and Manhattan skyline. It really just it serves to underscore the position of strength that JP Morgan's working in right now.
It all sounds like smooth sailing for JP Morgan, right? Record profits, a swanky new headquarters in the heart of Manhattan. So, Josh, what's all of this mean for the year ahead for JP Morgan and its big ambitions to remain the largest US bank?
In banking, scale matters, you know, and especially in an era where this is such an incredibly heavily regulated industry now, getting more so every year. And so, in an age when scale matters more and more, it makes sense that the biggest bank with the most scale would benefit the most. And that was really the story that played out in 2023.
Yeah.
And I think what's, you know, scary for the industry is not only is JP Morgan the most profitable bank by some distance now, they're also spending a lot of money on their business to try to become even bigger.
Why is that scary for the...
Well, just because it's... You know, banking in the U.S. relative to other countries is still a relatively fragmented industry. Like you have 4,300 banks. JP Morgan, in terms of its assets as a relative percentage of the U.S. economy, is 10-15% or so. It just shows you that there's still a lot of consolidation that can still happen in the U.S. banking industry.
Yeah. So do you think that we're going to see more consolidation in 2024?
I mean, there already has been this gradual consolidation and winnowing down of regional banks in the U.S. Before the 2008 financial crisis, there were more than 7,000 U.S. banks, and now we're down to more than 4,000. The question that's always discussed is, what's the quote-unquote right number of banks in the U.S. where you can still have this regional banking model? Could you still have the same kind of local flavor to U.S. banking with 3,000 banks or 2,000 banks? What regulators and lawmakers are very focused on is still preserving competition in U.S. banking. Because from the point of view around customer deposits, it's a good thing from the customer if people are competing for their money.
Yeah.
Because it means they get a better price on their deposits. So I think people and lawmakers are aware of that, but they also are wary of the biggest banks getting continually bigger mm-hmm. as a share of the overall market, which is something that JP Morgan managed to do last year. One of the really impressive accomplishments from them.
Keeping all of this in mind, are there any looming threats to JP Morgan's success long-term?
There are always challenges on the horizon, but I'd say the big one that's on people's minds when they think about JP Morgan's future is who will eventually replace Jamie Dimon when he one day retires. He's in his late 60s now. He's been running JP Morgan since the end of 2005. He hasn't shown any plans or willingness to step aside, but it is just the perennial question about who could come after Jamie Dimon, having done such a big job at JP Morgan for so long. And I'd say when it comes to the big US banks, the biggest key man risk is at JP Morgan.
In your opinion, how do you think JP Morgan is going to fare this year? Are their expectations to perform as well as last year?
I think people are skeptical that they can have another record year of profits after this year. JP Morgan itself said it was over-earning and they eventually expect to have to start paying more for deposits as customers start demanding more, and that would impact their profits. There's also the wild card about what's going to happen to interest rates this year. So if rates come back down, that's good for parts of the industry, but also means that the amount that you can charge for loans probably comes down too. So I think 2023 was an extraordinarily good year for JP Morgan. 2024 probably won't be as spectacular.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget, we're still collecting submissions of questions you have about markets, finance, or economics. If you send in a question, we might answer it on a joint show that we'll be putting together with the FT's Markets podcast, Unhedged. There's details on how to send in a question in our show notes. Behind the Money is hosted by me, Michaela Tendera. Safia Ahmed is our producer. Topher Forges is our executive producer. Sound design and mixing by Sam Giovinco. Cheryl Brumley is the global head of audio. See you next week.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.